9th at 6:30 p.m., Danielle Ate the Sandwich. Folk, pop, humor, and truth are words that describe the original songs in the style of Danielle Anderson, a solo performer who writes and releases music under the stage name Danielle Ate the Sandwich. This takes place at Lenexa City Hall, 17101 West 87th Street Parkway in Lenexa. Now through December 15th, the Habitat Contemporary Gallery presents Movement Through Memory, an evocative exploration of time's fluid tapestry. Cesar Veliz is a Mexican multidisciplinary artist based in Kansas City. His art is an emotional exploration of the personal experiences and cultural landscapes that have shaped the world around him. Veliz's paintings are characterized by the expressive use of color, symbolic imagery, and emotional depth. As a first-generation undocumented immigrant raised in the South and the Midwest United States, themes of identity, displacement, and belonging are explored in his works as a means of documenting the unique truths of his journey. Habitat Contemporary Gallery is at 2012 Baltimore Avenue, ACMO. For more information on these and many other events in our area, go to kkfi.org/artskcgo.
Hi, this is Chick Corea, and you're listening to 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, and this is the home of Charlie Parker.
Support for KKFI comes from the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater at Kansas City's Warwick Theater. Join the Met in their 19th season as they present Abby Mann's Judgment at Nuremberg, running January 11th to 21st. Judgment at Nuremberg brings the trials of the Nazi atrocities to life. Tickets on sale now. To find out more or to purchase tickets, go to warwick.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
About it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. Get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. On top of that, your pa and ma have parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it for a
Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I am Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on a rather dreary Monday right now in the city. Not fit for man or beast out there. And keep your little beasties in mind. You know, let them inside if that's at all possible on a day like today. It'll help everything out the best. Already people from the station are leaving for the football game tonight. That's they're going to freeze out there. I know they love to tailgate all afternoon into the evening, but I would watch it a little bit, yeah. Hello and welcome to the show. We have a great show planned for you today. We're going to talk about a Kansas City tradition that's coming back for this year. Well, it never has gone. It's always been there this year. The Nutcracker from the Kansas City Ballet will be opening very, very soon, of course. And with us to talk about that, if I can do this right. Do I have Devin Carney on the line, Mr. Carney?
I am here.
Glad to have you with us once again. It's outside, it's maybe dreary, but inside, I'll bet you're having fun getting ready for the Nutcracker.
Totally, completely. It's all about Nutcracker at this time of year.
Sure. That's become a tradition around here, one of several Christmas traditions the theatrical community has. How many years has the Nutcracker been showing on the ballet stages?
That's a very big question. It was first done in Russia just a few years ago, back in 1892. 1890. Then it was written in 1892, and it is Tchaikovsky's last of his three ballets he ever wrote. Believe it or not, he wrote three incredible ballets, Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty, and The Nutcracker.
And you've done all of those.
So that happened in 1892, but the first time it was performed in this country in a very, very different version was back in 1944 with San Francisco Ballet, when the first full production was performed in the United States. And that was 79 years ago. Here in America, that was the first time we saw it here in this country. I choreographed a version in 2015 that we've been doing ever since, which I'm thrilled about. And the company had been doing another production for about 28 to 30 years prior to that. So we've had a long tradition of Nutcrackers in Kansas City with Kansas City Ballet.
I'll bet you've tweaked it. Knowing you as I do, I'll bet there's been some little tweaks, maybe not little. There's been some changes, because you always do that. Because you like to experiment with your, maybe experiment's right, not the right word, but you like to do different things with your choreography and change it up a little. You changed the costumes a few years back. You changed other things as well. So what the audience that comes to see you beginning on December 1st, what kind of changes can they expect?
Well, we did a complete change of everything in 2015 when I first created this version, which I was thrilled about, with an incredible world-class design team for both costumes and scenery and lighting. Of course, all the choreography as well. Since that time, yes, there have been little changes here and there, adjustments of numbers of people in the show, as well as what the steps are. And there's no exception this year. I've done a few little things that, I don't know if only someone who's really been coming to see our show for many years will probably even notice. But the first time viewer is in for quite a treat when it comes to being a spectacular, and I mean that, that's quite understated. It's a spectacular show that has something for everybody in it. So no one will be disappointed, because it's entertaining. It's fun for an adult, or even the kids love it. And I was very cognizant of that when I created this version, to make sure that everybody was included and there was something to enjoy for all ages.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a wonderful point you indirectly made. Even though you've done it for a number of years, it's been seen since the 1800s and all of that, but still on your performances, probably during every performance, there's always somebody in the audience that has never seen it before, and it's new to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the dancers probably, you probably make them aware of that, even if they don't think of it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very aware of that reality, that a lot of people, the Nutcracker is the first touch point into the dance experience in a theatrical setting. So, you know, there's a lot of responsibility on our part as an organization and on every dancer to bring their A game to, like they do for all other productions, that they do it for the Nutcracker, because there's some young kid in that audience that may just be inspired to be a performing artist in their future, as I know that story has happened many times that I've heard of from dancers in our company, that they were first inspired by the Nutcracker to be a dancer themselves.
Have some of the dancers done this many times?
Especially,
I guess I'm thinking more of the children. They come out of your school for the most part, and they work their way up, as you've told me before. Is this the first time for some of them to be doing this?
Absolutely. Well, you know, all our students, the children's cast is all brought, drawn from our school, which is an incredible school, Kansas City Ballet School Academy. And there are a little under 100 students involved in each cast. We have two casts, so you do the math there. It's almost 200 students involved in the show over the course of December. There are students who this is their very first time seeing and performing in Nutcracker, because we start, you know, there are children in the show starting around the age of 9. And, of course, going all the way up till 18 when they are graduating from their ballet school programming. And there are kids who come in at their first show is when they're 9, and they do different roles every year as they grow up in the school. And that's also something I was very aware of when creating this work, was that there was something for every level of our school so that all children had the chance to participate in the production, from, you know, a little baby mouse or a little cherub angel, all the way to roles that are on point, which are for our very advanced, only our advanced students, of our angels and our reindeer women. There's everything in between, Michael. Everything in between, which is great, you know, and they have this wonderful growth experience as they go through their years in the school. And the same thing holds true for our company dancers that join when they're, in their early 20s, they might, or even 18 or 19 when they join our company or our second company, and they start, you know, doing the more core roles, and they begin to, with the years as they move by, have the opportunities to do some lower level soloist type roles. And then, you know, if they stay with us long enough, there's the chance for them to be doing principal roles like the Sugar Plum Fairy or the Cavalier or the Snow King and the Snow Queen. So it's a great opportunity, frankly, just internally to see artistic growth within the dancers, both in the school as well as in the company.
Is the Sugar Plum Fairy one of the coveted roles? If covet is the right word.
Absolutely. It is. It's that and the Snow Queen. Those are the two big roles of the production. And of course their partners, the male partners that are with them. Yes. And you know, the Sugar Plum Fairy, my goodness, you know, who doesn't know that musical phrase? It's everywhere. Beep, 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 right? It's everywhere. It's in every shopping mall. It's in elevators. It's just pervasive in our world. So that too comes along with it, that you're dancing to a piece of music that is so well known, and to bring that piece of music to life for an audience is so exciting. So that's another part of the fact and the reality of how cherished that particular role is.
Sure, that has to be very rewarding for you, especially seeing these young people grow and improve, and just goes on and on. I was asked an unusual question. Saturday night I was at an event, and one of the ladies, of course, they always come to me with these questions. I said, well, Devin should be here. He would know better. She said she had not seen it for a while. The last time she saw it, it was at the music hall. So she said, ask him how it's different from when it was in the Music Hall to the Kauffman Center where it is now. There has to be some differences, especially in that scene where, and she mentioned, where the sleigh flies off into the air.
Well, we don't have a flying sleigh, so there's a difference, but we have a flying balloon. So, you know, the story is still relatively the same, and I think that's important for your listening audience to understand, is that it's the Nutcracker, you know, and that's a really fun, beautiful story of this young girl who, spends this incredible journey, goes on this incredible journey to this world of the snow, king and queen, and then on to the land of the sweets, and she sees all these different, meets all these different exotic characters from far off lands who are representing different flavors, and eventually heads back home, and you're left wondering, was that a dream or did it really happen? And that has not changed, the story, and I think that's important, and I was very dedicated to that when I created the work, that I wanted the story to be the story we all know and love, and that, you know, there's reduced versions of this in book form that, you know, you read to your kids when they're young, and you grow up and you sort of get this idea of what Nutcracker is, and I'm very aware of that and wanted this production to be just that, something that you can relate to and enjoy and sort of feel like you're home when you watch this show. You know, apart from that, the choreography is, you know, all changed, of course, with the new version. There's a party scene just like there was when they're in our original production, you know, 20, 30 years ago. There's a battle scene where the Mouse King battles the Nutcracker Prince, and there's a snow scene, and there's a Land of the Sweets. So all those things are still there. It's just they look different. That's all.
Certainly, and, certainly.
They're more, you know, contemporary and updated, if you would say.
Sure. We're speaking with Devin Carney. He's the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet. He does most of the choreography. He has guest choreographers sometimes for some of the shows. But he has, like he said, in 2015, kind of revamped all of this, made it all new and fresh. And I assume that was probably connected with it moving to the Kauffman Center.
I would say it did have something to do with that, and it was just time for a new version. This was the great opportunity to do so, thanks to the Kauffman Center's updated flying system, and you know, their technology is really ready for that kind of production, and you know, the production also went, we were invited to the Kennedy Center to perform this production, which they were very interested in our production since we did create this brand new $2 million show. They invited us, and we performed there in 2017, and we also performed there in 2022. So we're a bit of a ongoing guest at the Kennedy Center with this production, and they love us there, and the audiences just have a grand time and really enjoy the show in many wonderful ways. So that's another part of this Nutcracker, which I'm really thrilled about, is that we are on the national stage representing our Kansas City community. And that's, to me, you can't get better than that for, you know, hometown pride, which I'm really thrilled about, that we have that chance to do that there in Washington, D.C.
Sure. And that has to be quite an honor. We're talking the Kennedy Center, Washington, D.C. You probably do it in front of the president and other dignitaries as well.
So you never know if they're going to be there, but plenty of dignitaries, though, that's for sure.
That's for sure. Speaking with Devin Carney, the artistic director, came here via, well, probably several places, but the ones that come to mind for me are Boston and Cincinnati. Did either of those places do the Nutcracker during the time you were there?
Oh, my goodness. Michael, yes. they did, and I was a part of, as a performing artist, in Boston, and, you know, we performed the Nutcracker. It was, you know, when I got there, they'd been performing the Nutcracker already for some 20 years, so 15 years when I got there. And we definitely performed a tremendous amount of Nutcrackers in Boston Ballet, and then in Cincinnati as well. It's an annual tradition in major ballet companies across this country to present a version of the Nutcracker, and it's so popular. And I think that's wonderful that we can offer the Nutcracker to our audiences, and be able to help be a part of the cheer and the joy of the holiday season. For me, that means everything, to help our audiences, our community, be able to come in and go on a journey and leave the theater uplifted, and a little bit lighter in the feet, and being able to see the holidays perhaps a little bit more from a childlike viewpoint, and have a little bit more of a childlike heart when it comes to the holidays, which there's a lot about the holidays get wrapped up in that can give you a lot of stress.
Sure.
And that's what the Nutcracker
sure.
does not do.
Yeah. And children liked it. It has several elements that the children like: the beauty, of course, the music, the dancing, the story, the battles.
Oh, yeah.
All things the children like, even young boys. Well, the girls probably link on to the Sugar Plum Fairy. The boys probably like the fighting scenes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And which is, and being a kid myself, I was very aware of the battle scene as being something that, had to be very much, a representation of a military siege against the Nutcracker, against the Mouse King and his minions of mice. After a childhood of seeing these things and playing in the, out in the yard with other kids, and just having that chance to be a part of that upbringing of just, the battles and having somebody be the victorious one. And all these things just come to the show, And Drosselmeyer is somebody who's very much an integral part of the production, and really is his gift to Clara, his goddaughter. This whole journey that Clara goes on is the mastermind of Drosselmeyer, who gives this to her, which I think is a really cool little subtext to the Nutcracker, the honoring and the gift giving that Drosselmeyer does for his relative Clara. I just think that's wonderful. It's touching,
Sure. Show opens, of course, on December the 1st. That's a Friday. Runs through the 24th. It would be difficult. I would confuse you if I gave you all the dates and times. But you can find all that if you go online to kcballet.org. There's also a phone number you can call for those of you who haven't gotten up to 2023 on the internet yet. That number would be 816-931-8993. They'll help you out there. They're used to people calling about that. Along with the performances that begin on December the 1st, there are also other events going on. I noticed that prominently on the website. There is the Nutcracker Ball, the Sugar Plum Fairy Children's Ball, and sensory-friendly performance, at least one that I saw, Devin, on all of those. Do you want to talk about the balls and the sensory-friendly performance?
Well, the Nutcracker Ball is just a very, black tie event to come and just have a great night with, around 500 other people, and just enjoy a fabulous dinner, great music, great company. The Children's Ball is an opportunity to bring your kids to a little bit more of a childlike experience with a performance by our school, who'll be performing at the Children's Ball. And the sensory performance is a really wonderful thing that we brought back. It's the first time bringing it back since COVID, which is an opportunity for other abled individuals to be able to come and see the show in a safe environment, and a lot about the show has been is altered for that show in terms of making the intensity, if you would say, of the show, the loudness or the brightness a little bit less, just to give it a little bit more of an opportunity to be able to relax and see the show. It also, you know, anybody can just get up and head out if they need to at any point. There's not that, you're not stuck in your seat because, you know, we don't sell all the seats, so there's room to spread out. You know, there's some cast participation in our lobbies with this show, so the kids can get an idea of what they're going to see in the theater. And it's all geared toward other able children, which I'm really so happy that we began this before COVID, and it's really great to bring it back. And it's a very moving experience to be a part of that show as well.
Absolutely. Performances can start or do start on December the 1st, run through the 24th, perhaps not every day, but a lot of days. This is by far your show that has the most number of performances. That's why I'm assuming you have two casts, really, or is it more than that?
Demi? Oh, more. Yep, there's more. There's many more. There's two casts of our children. Then for our company level and our second company level, we have about five different casts of each role, because it's a great Nutcracker is a great opportunity for dancers to experience many different types of dancing in one run. Normally a dancer will be in two casts of something if we're performing in the theater for 2 weeks. Since we're performing for 4 weeks, it gives a lot more opportunity for dancers to grow through the experience of being on stage. Obviously, they're all professionals and do an incredible job, but it's just so exciting to see the dancers of the company be able to have an opportunity to do these different roles. And sometimes they're the same as the year before. Sometimes they're different. Sometimes they're more challenging than they were the year before, and that's all part of the evolutionary process of a dancer developing their artistry over the what would be considered fairly short career that they actually have while their physicality is still at their premium point in their physical life.
Sure. Yeah, dancers, as athletes of any kind, and your dancers are certainly qualify as athletes. Career is limited, but you know they can learn, they can teach their skills to others afterwards. You became a choreographer, and you know a lot about that. You've been very groundbreaking in many ways with your choreography. But the show starts December the 1st, runs through the 24th. It's at the Muriel. There's two theaters at the Kauffman Center.
That's
if you've
right.
never been there, there's the Muriel Kauffman side, and there's another side at the Kauffman Center. And I was also asked by the same woman Saturday night, why is it all named Kauffman? And I had to chuckle and I said, you know, there's a lot of things in Kansas City that would not be here if it were not for the generosity of the Kauffman family. We would not have a baseball team. We would not have the Kauffman Center, the Business Innovation Center, and many, many other things as well. Mm. So a big salute to the Kauffmans for their generosity and all that they did for this city. And think of them when you see the Nutcracker going on beginning December 1st, running through the 24th. I don't imagine, well, at least with you running things, I don't imagine keeping the dancers and the other performers motivated is a problem at all. You probably do a good job of keeping them motivated.
Well, I hope to. Obviously, that's part of my responsibility is to keep our dancers inspired and on their I don't want to use a pat phrase, but keep them on their toes. you know, I want to keep them challenged, but not so challenged that they're overwhelmed. And, you know, the Nutcracker is a great opportunity for lots of growth and lots of potential discovery of who they can be. Since we do perform so many performances, so I am thrilled about that.
Yeah, and it gives the younger people a chance to get out there on stage and do
right.
something. They, you know, if you were doing your normal run of shows, and we're going to run out of time before you can mention that. But please come back, because I want to talk about your other shows sometime. But it gives them an opportunity to get in on this and get some experience there, probably before a packed crowd and such a prestigious show as well. A show that has played the, as you said, the top theater in Washington, D.C. as well. We're all happy about that. Thanks very much for arranging things so you could speak with me this morning. Always nice to hear, you know, what you have in mind for the shows. And I'm sure when next year comes around, you'll have more in mind for the Nutcracker.
Oh, yeah.
As well as the other shows in the season. Devin's very good at, you know, cooperating is not the right word, working together with other choreographers and putting things together. You seem to have struck gold doing that here, and congratulations on that, and best wishes everything going forward
in
the future.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Devin Carney, the artistic director and the head of choreography for the Kansas City Ballet. They will be presenting The Nutcracker beginning December 1st, and it'll run through the 24th. A lot of dates and times and all that. So my suggestion is to go to kcballet.org, look at the calendar there, and then once you've made some decisions, you might want to call. You can do it online, of course, but you can also call 816-931-8993 to go further than that. Okay. Thank you very much, Devin, for calling in and being with us today here on the Arts Magazine program. We're going to take our break, and then when we return, we're going to change styles entirely. We're going to talk to the Melting Pot Theater Company of Kansas City and their show, The Amen Corner, and the director, the associate artistic director, and a nationally known dramaturg will be with us when we talk about all that. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare in theaters and streaming. A riveting performance from Coleman Domingo and an important untold story propel the Netflix biopic Rustin. The film focuses on civil rights activist Bayard Rustin and his efforts to organize the groundbreaking 1963 March on Washington while deflecting criticisms within the movement about his gay lifestyle. While the structure is unbalanced, Rustin is still an evolving and effective history lesson. Michael Fassbender stars in Taika Waititi's sentimental feel-good sports movie, Next Goal Wins. Fassbender plays a down-on-his-luck soccer coach who attempts to reverse the fortunes of the American Samoa team that has never scored a single goal. While its heart is in the right place, Next Goal Wins is too formulaic to score. Instead, you may want to check out the 2014 British documentary Next Goal Wins that tells the same story. Trolls Band Together is the third musical comedy in the animated series, this time satirizing boy bands. Justin Timberlake and Anna Kendrick are back voicing the main characters, and NSYNC reunites for the soundtrack. Trolls Band Together is overly manic and frenzied, but should still appeal to very young kids and their boy band-loving moms. Heather Graham and Brandy star in the Netflix holiday farce Best Christmas Ever. Graham plays a woman who's jealous of an old friend's spectacularly successful life, as reflected in her family's yearly holiday newsletter. Heather sets out to prove that the claims are false and winds up putting her own family's Christmas in jeopardy. What's false is every awkward note of this movie. It's as artificial as an aluminum Christmas tree. Best Christmas Ever isn't the worst movie ever, but it's close. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
The All Souls Forum is a public forum to promote critical thinking for issues that involve ethical values of the contemporary world. Please join us at noon each Thursday for another presentation covering topics such as education, public health, the environment, racism, women's rights, and LGBTQIA+ issues. Right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio.
Did you hear something on KKFI that stopped you in your tracks or gave you one of those driveway moments? Well, you can listen again on the KKFI archive. Simply navigate your web browser to archive.kkfi.org and find every show from the past 2 weeks.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. We're going to change the course of things. We've been talking about a holiday show. The Amen Corner by James Baldwin is the next production that's up for the Melting Pot Theater here in Kansas City. They operate out of the... Correct me if I botch this up. It's still called the Just Off Broadway Theater in Pin
yes.
Valley Park. That is the voice, by the way, of Melanie Walker. She is the director of the show. She is the associate artistic director of Melting Pot Theater, and she is involved with the August Wilson Society. She a dramaturg in residence, a nationally recognized dramaturg of African American theater, and the performance of the work by August Wilson. And I ask her off the air, had she ever met August Wilson? Because I have. Not that I'm special or anything, but back when his shows were running on a regular basis at the Repertory Theater, the Kansas City Repertory Theater, they had an evening performance where they said, now, if you come early, Michael, we have a table for some media people, and they will get to sit and talk with August Wilson there. You know August Wilson, Michael. He was the one who was recently on 60 Minutes, which he was. And during the interview on 60 Minutes, he had a particular derby hat that he was wearing. He was wearing that same hat, so it was easy to pick him out. And he talked about Pittsburgh. He talked about the Pittsburgh cycle of shows and all that goes in with that. But I feel badly that I met him, but you didn't, because you specialize in his works.
I did. When I was in my master's program for theater history at UMKC, I centered my thesis around the work of August Wilson and the American Century Cycle and how his work shows up and is still relevant today. So I'm pretty jealous about your having a chance to meet him. I've never had that opportunity, but have certainly enjoyed really advocating for his work, advocating for the awareness and the performance and the scholarship of August Wilson's American Century Cycle.
Sure. I was sitting at the table, Robert Trussell, who was the Star's theater critic at that time, that he asked him most of the questions of things. But I was surprised. Wilson was very laid back. He was enjoying his favorite beverage, let us say, and he was talking about the Pittsburgh cycle and went into detail. And you're here for another show, but I just can't resist. He was talking about which decade of which show coordinated with which decade and what it meant in the process. Progress of African Americans in that area. So there was meaning behind those shows that
absolutely,
he did.
Absolutely, absolutely. So he's very well known for his canon of work called the American Century Cycle, but it's also known as the Pittsburgh Cycle because 9 of the 10 plays were set in Pittsburgh, which was his hometown. And each play is set in a different decade of the 1900s. And it really tells the story of not just the African-American experience in this country, but American history in general for that time period. So he's very well known for that canon of work. And we get to kind of follow the history throughout those decades of the 1900s.
In your work as a dramaturg, for people who don't know, tell them what a dramaturg does.
All right. So a dramaturg is affectionately known as the midwife of the theater, also sometimes known as a researcher or a theater detective. Production dramaturgs normally are contracted to work on shows, especially when it is a period piece and there is some historical context. And so what we do is we delve into the context of the show, the playwright, the time period in which the show was written, if there is any historical context that is relevant to the show. And we flesh all of that out for not only the actors, but the crew members and the audience members, so that the actors can give their most authentic performance, if they have a better understanding of what the show was about and what the playwright was responding to. And then also dramaturgs will many times provide study guides or other types of context for audience members so that they can have a better understanding when they come to see the show, and it just enhances their experience.
I remember seeing one of the shows he did at the Rep, and he didn't call them taxis. But I can't think now, what was the term that he used for them? And he had said that that's what we called them then.
Jitney,
that's
those
right.
Those were the Jitney cabs, which in that time period, and that is the name of that particular play, is called Jitney, that he wrote. And in that time period, the men of that community were very much entrepreneurs in their own right. And they provided a service for their community, and they received money for providing that service. And it was very much a taxi cab setup, but they were called Jitney cabs, and they operated out of Jitney stations.
Sure, one of our jazz DJs here at the station was a background player, and I believe in case something would happen to one of the two particular characters, he could step into the role. Mm-hmm. So I remember that especially from hearing him talk about that, and the director, the famous director that he worked with. I can't think of the man's name right now, but the famous director out of Minnesota.
Well, there were two. Lloyd Richards is probably one of the more well-known directors that he worked with, but certainly he did have a big presence in Minnesota as well.
Certainly.
So that Jitney situation was kind of that generation's Uber.
and being a dramaturg, you know that that's what they called them then.
Yes.
And that's okay, I've gotten far afield. Melanie is directing the Melting Pot Theater production of The Amen Corner, the story of a black female pastor in Harlem in the era. Was it set in the era that it performed in, which was 1954?
Yes, it is. So the story takes place in a storefront church in 1954 in Harlem. The church is led by Pastor Margaret Alexander, and which was, first of all, not common for that time for a church to be led by a woman pastor. But the church centers, or the story centers around her interactions with her congregation as a leader, as well as her interactions with her family, and how those two relationships sometimes converge. And so it's a really wonderful play that examines the role of the black church in our community in that time. And I think audience members will find that there are some elements that are still relevant today.
When I saw one of my neighbors here in town on Sunday, she was just dressed up in great finery for her trip to church. And I learned that is kind of a tradition in the black church. Is it still as much as it was back then, at least in the 50s. What was the show that was at the, were you here when the Unicorn did the show about, the hats, all the finery hats that the ladies
Crowns.
Wore?
Crowns,
yes.
Mm-hmm. So that very much was a tradition, especially in this time period. Again, this play is set in the 1950s, and that has carried through to more contemporary generations as well. Just the idea of presenting your very best for church on Sunday morning was something that was very, very important to the community. And so in more recent times, we have seen that tradition has sort of kind of fallen by the wayside just a little bit, just depending on what type of church, uh-huh. what denomination. But certainly the idea of come as you are is also very prevalent as well. So there's a good balance. We still have those church members that dress up in their finery and their best hats and their best suits. But then we also have a generation of churchgoers that understand that it's more important to come as you are.
Sure. Well, it is a generational thing, I think. That's the conclusion I came to. But when I think of this lady, I can imagine the struggle she had. Well, one, she was black. Two, it was in the 50s, and she was a woman. Mm-hmm. And chauvinism runs rampant even in the black community mm-hmm. as well, mm-hmm. and at least more so in the 50s, probably.
Absolutely, absolutely. I believe that what James Baldwin did in writing this piece is that he really is giving us a little subsection of a representation of what is happening in the larger society at the time. So not only is there some misogyny happening there, but of course there's also some elements that are representative of social injustices that are happening at that time in America. So it really is a cross-section of a little bit of everything that's happening in the 1950s in America.
Certainly. We're speaking with Melanie Walker. She is the director, the associate artistic director of the Melting Pot Theater and part of the August Wilson Society. It's an organization. I know I've covered Wilson before, but is that like a club of experts on August Wilson?
It really is an organization that is committed to advocating for the scholarship and performance of Wilson's work and not letting that important canon, you know, fall by the wayside, making sure that people remain aware of its impact and are still producing and performing and teaching the work of August Wilson.
Yeah, absolutely. At the show, I'm in Corner, and I assume that the church in Harlem probably was on a corner, and because the church was there, that's probably why they called it I'm in Corner, I'm guessing.
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that, but that certainly does have a lot to do with it. Like I mentioned, the Amen Corner is set in a storefront church in Harlem, but the term the Amen Corner comes from a group of people in a church, in any church community, that have those echoes for whatever the pastor or the leader or the priest is speaking on their sermon. And so they're echoing, they're shouting amen, they're praising, they're saying, preach, pastor. That is considered the amen corner, those groups of people. So,
well, I've noticed that's an active thing, mm-hmm, in Black churches, I've noticed.
Call and response, yes.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm glad there's a term for, mm-hmm, it, because I didn't know what to say that I saw, but it's interesting to know.
It really is a level of engagement between the speaker and the congregation that heightens the experience, but that call and response is very, very important in Black churches, so you're right.
Absolutely. Speaking to her, she directs, as I said, the show, The Amen Corner. It runs at the Just Off Broadway Theater. Now, that's located in Pin Valley Park. The actual address is 3051 Central Avenue. And if you need to MapQuest things, sometimes it's difficult to get in there. So I try to give that. I encourage MapQuesting and things like that. You need the zip code for that. And the zip code is 64141 for that. And it's called the Just Off Broadway Theater. You can, of course, go to the theater's website, kcmeltingpot.com. And there is a box office number, which I guess is the number for the theater group as well, 816-226-8087. And the show kicks off on November 30th. You've got another week after, yes, this week. So you're giving the actors Thanksgiving days off probably. But then they'll have to hit it pretty hard,
yes,
after the holiday's,
yes,
over. That's a 7:30 Friday, December the 1st, 7:30. Saturday, December the 2nd, 7:30. A matinee on Sunday the 3rd at 2:00 p.m. Then another week of shows, Wednesday the 6th, 7:30. Thursday the 7th at 7:30. Friday the 8th at 7:30. And closes out with a performance on the 9th of December at 7:30. So no matinee on that particular weekend.
Correct.
At the Just Off Broadway Theater, 3051 Central, just on the very... on the very south side of Pin Valley Park.
Correct.
If you're driving down 31st Street and you're going west, let's say, off to your right, you can see the Just Off Broadway Theater down there, which incidentally used to be the police horse barn for the police horses back in the day before there was a fire. But we don't have time to go through all that. But it's a historic building in that sense of the word. Yeah, it begins on those days. Tell me about your cast. Casting is very important, especially the key role of the lady pastor.
Absolutely. So Sister Margaret is being played by a wonderful actress named Amber Redman. And this is not her first performance with KC Melting Pot Theater, so we definitely considered her part of the family, the repertoire. and she's doing a wonderful job leading this church. Her son, David, is being played by Solomon Langley. We also have several more characters in the play. Luke is being played by Craig Lindsay. Sister Odessa is being played by Lynn King, who is has a lot of notoriety here in Kansas City Theater. Sister Moore is being played by Deanna Patrick. Sister Boxer is being played by Jackie Price. Brother Boxer is being played by Douglas Walker. And Sister Jackson is being played by Adina Carr. And then we have Sister Sally, who's being played by Donna Moon. So we've really curated a really wonderful cast, and I'm so excited to have the audiences be able to come in and experience this play.
With such a well-known work, it goes back to 1954, and it is a James Baldwin work, of course. So in some ways I hesitate to ask the question, but being the curious type that I am, do you ever do any tweaks other than what is actually in there, or do you have them just do it word for word, movement for movement? I know some directors like to experiment a little bit. Nothing that changes the story, but they like to do that.
Well, it is very important for us to honor the script as much as we possibly can with playwrights like James Baldwin and August Wilson, who we talked about previously. We honor their words because they were important enough for them to include them in the script. So we stay on top of our cast members quite a bit to be as word perfect as possible when learning their lines. The things that we may take creative license on are certain things in the stage directions, just like blocking. Certain musical choices that may not be as important to the story that maybe we can be a little more creative mm-hmm. on. Some directors may choose to make certain choices more contemporary than others, but for this piece, since it is a period piece set in 1954, it's important to me to honor all of the original choices that James Baldwin made for his story. So every now and then it's possible, like I said, to have a little bit of wiggle room and take some creative license, but we really do try to honor the work as much as we can.
Absolutely. We're talking about the show story. Once again, The Amen Quarter is the story of a black female pastor in Harlem. A lot going on for her, for and against her in a situation like that. It's a struggle, of course. She manages to deal with things as they come along. What kind of input do you give the actress for something like that?
So we talk a lot about the timeline, what's happening in the country during this time period. So in early to mid 1950s, the civil rights movement has started to pick up speed and pace. James Baldwin makes a lot of commentary and really, really examines the role of the black church in the civil rights movement. And he really was an artist that was a little bit ahead of his time. In the 1950s, he didn't feel as though the black church was doing quite enough to propel the movement forward. And as we can see, when we look back in history, we do see that that started to happen a little bit more the later it gets in 1950s, and then of course in the 1960s. So he really was an artist that was ahead of his time and just kind of speaking about the things that he was observing and ways to propel those things forward. So as a dramaturg and as a director, what I'd like to do is definitely give my cast an idea of what was happening in that time period. So that's always helpful for them.
I'm sure that's really wise, because if you think about it, some of the, in fact, a lot of the early leaders in the civil rights movement were pastors.
Absolutely.
We could name some of the names, but yes, they were very much involved. And even around here, some of the organizations, or the churches, I should say, will endorse candidates come election time and all that. So that's an important factor in the black community. The church, I guess, is a very important factor in the black community.
The role of the church absolutely was very important then and still is today. It's still very relevant today. As a place for meetings, as a place for coming together to discuss what was happening in the community, as a place of refuge, as a place of hope, all of those things definitely applied in that time period and certainly today. And as you mentioned, even the influence today in how we vote or which candidates have our best interests in mind. A lot of constituents will look towards the Black church to explore those different avenues and inform, be informative on the ways in which they should take.
And many of the pastors have, Emmanuel Cleaver became the mayor of Kansas City, and he's now a congressman from mm-hmm. Kansas City. He was a pastor, for people who don't remember those days. But others have been involved in the political movement as well.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting about James Baldwin is that he was raised in the church. He is the stepson of a Baptist minister. And he himself began preaching at a very early age, around the age of 13. So his relationship with the church was a very personal and intimate one, since he himself was brought up and was able to make a lot of observations. And I do believe that's why he was able to make this commentary on how he felt about the Black church at this time.
Sure, yeah. And the Melting Pot Theater is known for being a theater who specializes in doing a lot. They're not all Black shows, but for the most part, they are Black African-American style shows. And you being the artistic director over there, you probably have a lot to do with that selection, I'm guessing.
Well, our founder, Harvey Williams, the theater was founded by Harvey and Linda Williams, and our artistic director is Dr. Nicole Hodges-Pursley. And so the selection of the season really falls upon our founder and our artistic director, but certainly the rest of the leadership team have input in what we would like to mount for the community. And the stories that we tell at KC Melting Pot Theater are mainly African-American stories written from an African-American perspective, but the lens in which we view humanity is cross-cultural. It definitely crosses over into other religions, other cultures, other races. Theater really is, I like to tell people all the time, that theater is like a gym for empathy, because it's where we get to practice our humanity. It's where we get to view sections of lives and experiences that we may never have seen before. And we can do that in the form of a stage play, going to watch a story being told on stage. So it really is a gem for empathy.
Certainly. And I stand corrected. You are the associate artistic director.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes.
Didn't mean to take that other lady's title for you.
No worries.
In doing that. Show opens on Thursday, November the 30th at 7:30. Performances run for essentially two long weekends.
Basically.
One Thursday through Sunday and the other Wednesday through Saturday. At the Just Off Broadway Theater, that's at the very south end of Penn Valley Park. You can see it off to your right if you're traveling west on 31st Street. That's where it is. Getting in can be a little difficult, so you might want to go to the theater's website. I believe they have directions down there.
Absolutely.
To help people get in. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you so much.
And telling us all about it. You can visit the Amen Corner during those dates. We're seeing the production when we've been talking with Melanie Walker. She is the director of the show, the associate artistic director, and a member. And I found that so interesting, especially because I had a chance to meet him, August Wilson and the August Wilson Society and all that. A dramaturg in residence. And so you're used to researching things. How often, and don't name any specific show, but how often in researching shows do you find that the director or the actors are doing something wrong and you have to step in and correct things?
Every now and then, yes. I just offer some gentle guidance with the information that I have found through my research, and it's always helpful.
Yeah, it's very good to stand corrected on things that are wrong, because we certainly don't want to put the wrong information out there.
Right.
And people like you help keep that. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank
Melanie
you for having
Walker,
me.
Director of the show, the associate artistic director, and serves many functions for the Melting Pot Theater Company of Kansas City. You can go online, of course, to kcmeltingpot.com or call their box office number at 816-226-8087 if you have an interest in that. Thank you very much, Melanie.
Absolutely.
For being with us. The Jazz Canadian is with us. And he will be presenting some fine jazz for you this afternoon. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.